Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network. This is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger right here in the bunker, and it is July the 12th, 2014, Saturn's Day. And we're still at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show and any other projects you'd like to help us with. And we'll put your money to good use. Yes, we will. Well, let's see. Today we're going to do things a little differently. I'm going to send out two attachments. One is the one I'm talking on now. The other is one that I put together from several broadcasts from the rogue progressive Mike Malloy on the Israel situation. The Palestinian situation, which I think you're going to find quite interesting, is the progressives, or at least some of the progressives, are dumping really heavily on Israel now, something they should have done years ago. But worrying about being opposite of the right wing, you know, of course, actually, the progressives are doing a better job of criticizing Israel than the right wing is, except a few spokesmen out there. So I'm going to send that. It's about 40 minutes along to you, and I'm going to put it on our breaking news spot up on resist.com. Tune into that. I'm going to try to keep it updated quite a bit. That is breaking news archives up on resist.com. So that'll be 40 minutes of that you can download. So it's a pretty nice day here. We've had sun this morning and then a little shower, and now it's calmed down and a little humid, but that's about it. So anyhow, let's see. Is there anything else here I need to remind you of? Here's a tidbit I think you should know about. The Chinese are coming over here with millions and billions of dollars, and they want to spend it on assets that tend to hold their value. And at least the theory is that housing does, but it is far from what it was in 2004. The demand side is critical because without it, housing will be a giant bust again. It's difficult to analyze the appetite for foreign buyers, but data on millennials is a bit more tangible, and there are few glimmers of hope this generation can be the octane for a housing boom. In other words, another housing bubble, and then they'll stick a pin in it, and down it'll go again. Here's another breaking piece of news. It shows that the NSA is not just pursuing terrorism, as it claims, but ordinary citizens going about their daily communication. Quote, the NSA is mass collecting on everyone, Binney said, and said to be about terrorism, but inside the U.S., it has stopped zero attacks, unquote. The lack of official oversight is one of Binney's key concerns, particularly of the Secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA, which is held out by NSA defenders as a sign of the surveillance scheme's constitutionality. Yeah, secret court, that's constitutional. A Mexican train with more than 1,000 illegal invaders derailed en route to Texas border area. The cargo train was transporting both Central Americans and Mexican adults and children, hoping to enter the United States illegally and surrender themselves to the Border Patrol agents, Reuters reports. None of the illegal invaders about the Mexican train were injured when it derailed. The train came off the tracks in the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca on Wednesday. Many of the people riding on top of the trains were young children and teenagers. The trains, which are believed to be used by coyotes to shuttle illegal invaders to America, travel through rural and rugged terrain, but many feel they are still easy to spot and ultimately to stop. A U.S. Border Patrol agent has gone public with some incredible charges against the Obama administration, accusing it of aiding, abetting, and facilitating the smuggling of illegal invaders across the border. unquote. The agent, Hector Garcia, told CNN in a recent interview that the current chaos of mass illegal invaders taking place along the southwest U.S. border is being organized and orchestrated by Mexico-based drug cartels. Well, that makes sense. That's the end of that for now. We'll be sending you this is a second attachment. First attachment. So, 14-5, and I'll see you Moonsday, and we'll go at it again. How about that? And just remember to shut up.
The hour. Not really hearing. Coming right back to your phone calls, but I want to share this email with you from Michael in Roswell. Just a few more thoughts on U.S.-Israeli relations. Michael writes, what's happening now, I think, is a rueful commentary on what the U.S. attempted around the world during the Cold War. Israel was not of major interest or importance to the U.S. until the CIA belatedly, as always, discovered that Israel had produced a nuclear weapon. After that, the U.S. actively coddled Israel as its nuclear bulldog in the Middle East. We imagined that Israel would ride herd on all those left-leaning secular Arab leaders like Nasser for us, and all it would cost us would be a few arms and a little money. Turned out that those arms and that money weren't so small, and the fascism emerging in Israel is a direct consequence of defending that Cold War client state that wasn't a client, it seems, against any and all criticism, even when it was deserved. All this has eventually led to Israel owning the Holocaust as a brand, despite the fact that many others, Catholics, trade unionists, communists, homosexuals, dissidents of all types, ended up in the ovens also. The Israelis now own the Holocaust, and what mystifies me is how the Israelis have come to see that Holocaust as the justification for its territorial expansion and its attempts at ethnic cleansing. Because if one were to draw a single lesson from the Holocaust, it would not be ethnic cleansing or territorial expansion, since those are precisely the objectives that drove the Holocaust in the first place. Our foreign policy establishment really does need to brush up on its Mary Shelley. It was our money, our arms, and our cowed negligence that helped make this monster that is now the state of Israel. Michael in Roswell. By the way, this hour is being sponsored, Lance. All right, where are we? We're right here. Dane is in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Dane.
Oh, hey, Mike. I just thought I'd make a comment here. You were talking earlier about how before learning about things, about thinking that Israel was all great.
Right.
These other people were all bad. I remember being taught that in school in so-called liberal San Francisco.
Really?
Yeah, I was born in San Francisco in 1989.
Yeah, well, that has been the party line in this country. It doesn't make any difference what party is involved. The liberals have been some of the most ardent supporters of Israel, no matter what Israel did.
True. I even heard some stuff about, I didn't actually, there was supposed to be a thing about Elizabeth Warren even being more supportive of Israel than Obama is.
Well, most U.S. politicians are, for some reason, support for Israel and acquiescent to whatever Israel wants from the U.S. Congress seems to be part of the entry level requirement to get into the U.S. House or Senate or the executive branch. It's really pretty pathetic. I don't know any other. Don't misunderstand this, and I hope nobody else out there misunderstands this. But Israel is the only country that I'm aware of that insists that the rest of the world recognizes its right to exist. I don't know where that comes from. You know, a nation, I don't think any nation has an inherent right to exist. If you somehow establish yourself or break free from colonialism or do whatever, good on you, mate. But to have to have one country on earth say, we, unlike all other nations, have a right to exist, to me is, I don't know where that comes from. And I think it's just a form of madness that, that keeps this craziness going in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the problems over there seem to be caused by Israel.
The problems in Israel Palestine. Where does one want to start that discussion? We can't start it in the 67 war. We can't start it in any of the wars that Israel has become engaged in. I don't think we can. We can't start it with the acts of terror by the Stern Gang and the Irgun and some of those early Jewish terrorist organizations that fought the British when Palestine was a British protectorate. We can't start there. Where do we start? Do we go back to the Balfour Declaration? Do we go back to the early Zionists in the 19th century? Most people, when you say, well, let's begin a discussion on the Middle East, they want to start with current affairs, how the Israelis are being shoved into the sea, which is just not the case. I don't know how to discuss this issue, frankly, Dane.
Yeah, it's complicated.
It is.
But what I can't stand is the part where it always comes out about for Israel. Well, you know, I don't see that as the case.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. You don't see what is the case?
It's always plastered all over the media for Israel.
Right, right.
Everything, and it's like I just don't see that as the case, you know.
Well, it seems like so many institutions in the United States, whether they're academic, although that's where you get the most resistance to that Israel right, no matter what, but academic, a business community, a political, their media, there is an agreement that no matter how atrocious the behavior is of the state of Israel, it will not be trotted out in the first instance of reporting something horrible that's happened in the Middle East. It always starts with the Israelis were provoked, the Israelis were attacked, the Israelis this, the Israelis that. Meanwhile, the truth of the matter just sits there, and the American public continues to wallow in the ignorance. I don't see that ever changing, Dane, because there is an understanding in all those social institutions that I just mentioned that Israel will not be challenged, much less condemned, no matter what it does. Israel is touted as the only democracy in the Middle East, as the only this in the Middle East, as the only that in the Middle East. Israel has drawn the United States into so many situations that we would have been better served to stay out of. Not only that, but when you consider the attack on the USS Liberty, during the 67 war, when, an American, surveillance ship was brutally attacked by the Israeli Air Force and a number of scores of American Navy personnel were murdered. They weren't war casualties. They were murdered by the Israelis. When you take all this into consideration, I don't know how you begin a discussion or how you maintain a discussion with anybody about any of this. It's just an impossible situation, and I think it was designed to be impossible. Dane, I got to leave it there. Thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. I don't know how to talk about it, he said, as he tries desperately to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. I will wait for the emails to come in tomorrow. Once again, stating categorically that I am an anti-Semitic son of a bitch who deserves to be murdered or killed or what have you. It always happens. That's old stuff. And actually, to anyone out there who is considering writing that, sending me an email like that, you know, save the exercise of your fingers. I couldn't care less. I'll just have my friend redesign one of our algorithms to pick up on any words and thoughts about that, too. I don't care. Lib Talker says Israelis like Nazis. Yeah. All right, we have a poor pathetic bastards at these right-wing websites. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey, Mike. Okay, here's what I'll do.
Okay.
The question seems to be, how did the nation of Israel become able to, for lack of a more loving term, vagina whip the U.S., certainly, and the rest of the world, or a good chunk of it. And I'll be Mr. Peabody, and you be Sherman, and we'll get into the Wayback Machine and set the dials about 4,000 years ago, and here's what we'll find. We've got an ignorant tribe of nomadic people wandering around aimlessly, talking to burning bushes, and being declared the chosen people by the head deity of the time, or at least that was his PR. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a hell of a distinction. Out of all the nations of the world, to be proclaimed the chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
So they go through all manner of battles, and when they're not begatting, they're killing one another, and they're slaying their enemies, and, you know, so on down the line. And granted, they run into some trouble along the way, not the least of which was what happened by the Nazis in World War II. But then they declare themselves a nation. That is to say, like you said, they do what the colonial people did and the pilgrims did. They do, like Dick Gregory said, it would be like if my wife and I were walking down the street and you're sitting in your Buick and he says, hey, Lucille, let's discover that Buick, okay?
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, they did over there what we did here 400 years ago
right.
to the native peoples. So when you've got that distinction of being perceived as the chosen people, you can basically do no wrong. And anyone who says anything contrary to that notion, you know, who does, it's like comedy. You buy the premise, you buy the bit. Well, those few people who don't buy the premise and definitely don't buy the bit, they're called infidels and, you know, in your case, anti-Semitic, at least the charges that are made against you.
Right.
So I guess I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and you know, the most ardent supporters of that whole crazy idea that some a group of nomadic Bedouins wandering around the Middle East 4,000 years ago would be the so-called chosen people. Some of the most ardent advocates of that are American Christians Christians in different parts of the world, because without the Jews, the Christians don't exist.
Well, and they're required to buy into it. That's the insidious nature of the scam. You know,
right.
they invoke a higher power, so-called,
right.
And any time anybody steps out of line, you're ready for the fire and brimstone and thunderbolt.
That's it.
And it's, I mean, it's a brilliant scheme.
It is.
and when you think of all of the blowback and the fallout and the corpses littering the landscape over low these thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
based on that premise, It's sickening. It's disgusting. And, you know, yet some people willingly buy into the premise.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, Scott, you start from that premise, because the Abrahamic religions, the other two, sprung from this ancient tribal nonsense from the Middle East. My point is, not only is Judaism insane, but Christianity and Islam are equally insane, if not even more so. Although, well, I don't know. It's a three-way tie. I mean, these three religions, if you want to take a look at certain parts of the world, these three religions, directly and indirectly, are responsible for so much death, so much destruction, so much chaos, so much blood I mean, it's just madness. Just madness. I mean, just go back and read Exodus. Read Leviticus, and then move into the New Testament. Read some stuff from the Quran. Read about the prophets and all three religions and how twisted and sick and degenerate and violent and murderous they all were. And yet we're all supposed to believe that they all stem from this loving God, you know, this hokum, this nonsense of some cloud being that is just so benevolent and so beneficent that he just drenches the world in blood and destruction. I mean, this is insanity, Scott. I can't think of anything more insane than following one of these Abrahamic religions, unless it would be Hinduism. That's equally insane. So it's just crazy.
Okay, we can put you down then as a yes, that on every page of history, no matter which page you turn to, all the mayhem and madness and blood and gore has its original source in religion.
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, that's one down and, what, 7 billion to go.
There you go. All right, thanks, Scott. I got a boogie.
He in New York City sent me a happy church night missive. Hi, Mike. Some quotes on religion from the time of the founding fathers. Thomas Paine wrote the following about religion. And these were found at thinkexist.com. Thinkexist.com. Thomas Paine. Quote, of all the tyrannies that affected mankind, tyranny religion is the worst. Every national church or religion has established itself by pretending some special mission from God, as if the way to God was not open to every man alike. Of all the systems of religion that ever were invented, there is no more derogatory to the Almighty, more unedifying to man, more repugnant to reason, and more contradictory to itself than this thing called Christianity. Ooh. Thomas. See, Thomas was a believer. I mean, you know, he was a deist, like most of these guys were. Here's another one. There are many commandments of God that are shocking to humanity and to every idea we have of moral justice. And this one, persecution is not an original feature in any religion, but it is always the strongly marked feature of all religions. Yes. So on that happy note, and for folks who are not too familiar with the program, church night is Wednesday night because I used to... Mike, from a truth-seeking, freedom-loving, not-so-angry old white man and an educated, constitution-loving American citizen, I want to give you a huge thank you for having the brass to take on the ADL and the SPLC in making people realize that there are two sides to every story. I am still waiting for Americans to wake up to the fact that the biggest threat to Washington is the day that the right and left join together against their government. They will no longer bite on the wedge issues thrown out to them daily, such as anti-women, anti-gay, anti-Tea Party, anti-immigration, and on and on. When they demand that white-collar lawbreakers will be thrown in prison with no hope of parole, bankers, IRS, Federal Reserve, corrupt judges and politicians, drug cartels, and even presidents of the United States, this country was never a democracy. It is a constitutional republic. The Constitution was written to limit the powers of government, period. This country has become like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, running to the wizard to solve all their problems, only to realize they have always had the power to solve their own problems. Refuse to be a victim. Steve, and his last name. I don't totally agree with everything Steve wrote, but so what? Here's another one that I don't totally agree with everything that was written, but so what? This is from Rocky in Madison, Wisconsin. Mike, I listened to last night's podcast, and you were on the flu shot thing again. It's written, but so what? This is from Rocky in Madison, Wisconsin. Mike, I listened to last night's podcast, and you were on the flu shot thing again. I see your point, but there is an issue with the preservative. I had a very bad reaction. I also believe this was the primary issue Bobby Kennedy Jr. was pursuing, and the autism thing just got swept along. Around 5 years ago, I spent some time in the UW-Madison Hospital, Level 1 Trauma Center, with an unrecognized immune system attack, to the point that for almost 2 weeks, I could only sleep standing in a corner so I wouldn't fall over, clutching my body like a twisted rag. The only medication that worked was buckets of ibuprofen, so much that I had to take special iron supplements. After 4 months of frustration, they tried acupuncture. During this procedure, I experienced the foulest taste one could imagine. This was apparently caused by the liver dumping heavy metals. The University of Wisconsin then went back to early blood samples and found mercury. Then they then went to my history and found the attack started 1 week after receiving a flu shot. I am an EMT, and my immunization records are detailed. It was the mercury preservation from the shot. Turns out there's a small but significant percentage of people who react to the mercury preservative thimerosal. They think the ibuprofen was doing something to move the heavy metal around, giving me some relief. I signed a number of permission forms then to study my situation. They never contacted me again, so I have no idea where it ended up. I'm doing fine now. One last thing. 16 years ago, University of Wisconsin Pediatric Group was studying the triple M shot. They were thinking it is too much for small bodies at one time. As part of the study, they gave my son the shots separately over several months, and we had no issues. I'm not sure of this study's status or results, or even if it was completed. I can say, as an EMT for 20 years, I have transported several kids having bad reactions to the triple M shot. One ended up with permanent metal issues. They thought it was from his elevated fever. I think he means mental. This may be the, quote, autism, end quote, thread that people hold on to, you know, as in an ounce of truth. Last I heard, the medical profession feels autism starts in the womb. Love your show, but please give us the Marisol victims a little slack. Regards, Rock. The videos from the Gaza bombardment by the Israeli military, the videos are just shocking. It's nothing new in Gaza or other parts of the globe. When you see the looks on the faces of the children, the child refugees, who have no idea why this is happening. I think about my children, I think about my grandchildren who have grown up without being forced into a situation of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is what all of these kids will suffer. We just keep creating, we being humans, we just keep creating generation after generation of people who are so damaged, so horrified, so struck. And then when you see the parents who are carrying their dead children through the streets of Gaza, when you think about the Israeli attacks in Gaza in 2008, 2009, and 2012, where hundreds of children were killed as a result of those military operations. The Israelis are committing war crimes. Indiscriminate bombing of population centers is considered a war crime, not unlike the war crimes committed by the United States. If Putin's military decided to start bombing Kiev, the whole goddamn world would go insane and berserk, and the loudest screamers would be the Americans, the Brits, the Canadians, whoever else. But in Gaza, where you have one of, if not the most densely populated patches of ground on earth, and the Israelis are sending missiles and bombs and what did our president say today? He'd be willing to try to negotiate a truce between David and Goliath. A truce. There is no power in the Middle East, and possibly no power on earth, that is as well armed and able to wreak total destruction as Israel. Now, granted, they may only have 500 nuclear bombs, whereas the United States, we have, what, 8,000? The Ruskies have, what, about the same number? Who knows what, you know, all the other nuclear-powered countries have? But, you know, to continue this attitude of poor little Israel, are you serious? That's not what I started out to talk about. Parents, once again, are reporting signs of anxiety and stress among their kids. Well, no kidding. Anxiety and stress when grandma and grandpa are being blown into chunks of bone and flesh, and the school is gone, and the bombs are coming in. Oh, that's right. Hamas is launching rockets into southern Israel where they're going thud into the dirt. After the attack against Gaza in 2012, the post-traumatic stress rate among children doubled, according to the UN's Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Oh, Agency for Palestinian Refugees, why, they must be lying. Isn't that the attitude? A spokesman for that organization said the main thing we're facing in Gaza is that many organizations haven't finished their work yet with children affected in the last attack, and here comes another. Osama Damo, communications senior manager for Save the Children, said children are likely to face a lot of disorders, especially when it's bedtime, because so many of these military strikes take place during the night. He told Al Jazeera, he's in Gaza, he told Al Jazeera, quote, the fear that they will be left with is unmanageable for children. You know, you think about the fears your kids have if they were brought up in the United States. I think about the fears my kid has or had, you know, my children. Molly doesn't seem to have any, but when she was young, oh, yeah, she was afraid of the boogeyman. She's afraid of, you know, maybe some character that she read in one of her little books or something, you know. Or she was afraid of the creatures I made up and the stories I told her. But the reason for telling those stories, who was it? Where's that quote? G.K. Chesterton said, fairy tales do not tell children that dragons exist. Children already know that dragons exist. Fairy tales tell children that dragons can be killed. Captain Mary sent that to me from Memphis a number of years ago. But the children of Gaza, or the children of Syria, or the children of Iraq, or the children wherever, are not dealing with fairy tales and dragons. They're dealing with bombs and death and destruction. And, you know, we make such a big deal about returning American soldiers who went over, who joined up knowing full well what they were joining up for, who were armed to the teeth with the most advanced individual weaponry that has been invented, and they come back with PTSD, and then you have 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds, 5-year-olds who go through bombardments and attacks and missiles and slamming into the ground and people being blown to pieces, and they don't have any protection, nothing. And what do we do about those children?
Not a goddamn thing. That's what we do about those children. Nothing. Nothing. Our policies don't allow this kind of stuff to go on. Our policies promote it. And in some cases, our policies are the leading cutting edge of this kind of horror. So that Dick Cheney can sit back on his crippled ass and say, whoa, show me those videos again of shock and awe. The impact of bombings, it says here, on civilians has been an issue with Operation Protective Edge. That's the military Israeli military offensive launched after the deaths of three kidnapped Israeli teens late last month. Its Air Force, Israel's Air Force and Navy, have launched over 500 strikes on Gaza, killing at least 72 Palestinians, injuring hundreds. Israel's leadership has said the operation will not be short and has even hinted at a ground invasion into Gaza as Hamas continues to retaliate by firing rockets into Israel. So another generation of kids who will grow up with the kind of hatred that you can expect. The type of offensive, Al Jazeera reports, being launched by the Israelis leaves no possibility of providing an entirely safe haven. Both children and adults can feel helpless as a result. This one person they're quoting has three daughters and one son, and the mother says she has tried to comfort her children, but her nine-year-old still cries all night as Israeli airstrikes shake the ground in Gaza. She said, it's hard to explain politics to children. They hear from other neighborhood children that it's Israel bombing Gaza again. But still, I can't give them an answer as to why. I am afraid myself, and my children come to hide in my bedroom. How can I possibly show them I am not afraid? The organization Save the Children is calling on all parties to agree to a ceasefire so that vital services can be provided to the children of Gaza. That's going to happen. Remember when there was no conflict and the Israelis decided that they were going to cut off, they were going to isolate Gaza. Remember the mercy ships that tried to make it to Gaza and the Israelis would board the ships and kill people. Remember when medical supplies and needed supplies for children and for sick people tried to get through and the Israelis said no. The Israelis have become Nazis. In every sense of the word. From the Jewish Daily Forward, a piece by J.J. Goldberg, how politics and lies triggered an unintended war in Gaza. In the flood of angry words that poured out of Israel and Gaza during a week of spiraling violence, few statements were more blunt or more telling than the throwaway line by the chief spokesman of the Israeli military, Brigadier General Moti Almoz, speaking on July 8th on Army Radio's morning show, quote, we have been instructed by the political echelon to hit Hamas hard, end quote. That's unusual language for a military mouthpiece. Typically, they spout lines like, quote, we will take all necessary actions, or the state of Israel will defend its citizens. You don't expect to hear, this is the politician's idea, they're making us do it. Admittedly, demurrals on government policy by Israel's top defense brass, once virtually unthinkable, have become almost routine in the Netanyahu era. Usually, though, there's some measure of subtlety or discretion. This particular interview was different, where most disagreements involve policies that might eventually lead to some future unnecessary war. This one was about an unnecessary war they were now stumbling into. Spokesmen don't speak for themselves. General Almoz was expressing a frustration that was building in the army command for nearly a month since the June 12th kidnapping of three Israeli yeshiva boys.
The crime set off a chain of events in which Israel gradually lost control of the situation, finally ending up on the brink of a war that nobody wanted. Not the army, not the government, not Hamas. The frustration had numerous causes. Once the boy's disappearance was known, troops began a massive 18-day search and rescue operation, entering thousands of homes, arresting and interrogating hundreds of individuals, racing against the clock. Only on July 1, after the boys' bodies were found, did the truth come out. The government, the Netanyahu government, had known almost from the beginning that the boys were dead. It maintained the fiction that it hoped to find them alive as a pretext to dismantle the West Bank operations of Hamas. The initial evidence was the recording of victim Gilad Sher's desperate cell phone call to Israel's 911. When the tape reached the security services the next morning, neglected for hours by 911, the teen was heard whispering, "They've kidnapped me," followed by shouts of "heads down," then gunfire, two groans, more shots, then singing in Arabic. That evening, searchers found the kidnappers' abandoned, torched Hyundai with 8 bullet holes and the boy's DNA. There was no doubt. Prime Minister Netanyahu immediately placed a gag order on the deaths. Journalists who heard rumors were told the Shin Bet wanted the gag order to aid the search. For public consumption, the official word was that Israel was, quote, acting on the assumption that they're alive, end quote. It was, simply put, a lie. General Almos was in charge of repeating the lie. True, others backed him up, including Defense Minister Moshe Ya'alon. But when the truth came out on July 1, General Almos bore the brunt of public derision. Critics said his credibility was shot. He'd only been spokesman since October after a long career as a blunt-talking field commander with no media experience. Others felt professional frustration. His was personal. Nor was that the only lie. It was clear from the beginning that the kidnappers weren't acting on orders from Hamas leadership in Gaza or Damascus. Hamas's Hebron branch, more a crime family than a clandestine organization, had a history of acting without the leaders' knowledge, sometimes against their interests. Yet Netanyahu repeatedly insisted Hamas was responsible for the crime and would pay for it. You see where this is going? This was published at the Jewish Daily Forward today. It goes on. Amid the rising tension, cabinet meetings in Jerusalem turned into shouting matches. Ministers on the right wing demanded the army reoccupy Gaza and destroy Hamas. Netanyahu replied, backed by the army and liberal ministers, that the response must be measured and careful. It was an unaccustomed and plainly uncomfortable role for Netanyahu. He was caught between his pragmatic and ideological impulses. It goes on. The operations army code name, incidentally, is Protective Edge in English. But the original Hebrew is more revealing, Zuk Eitan, or Solid Cliff. That, the army seems to feel, is where Israel is headed, towards a cliff. You can find this in the Jewish Daily Forward, which is an American publication, forward.com. The title, How Politics and Lies Triggered an Unintended War. How Politics and Lies Triggered an Unintended War. Forward.com if you want to check it out. We'll be back after and just say, well, I've got to get away from that topic because it's too painful. And in the meantime, I mean, even as we're speaking right now, it's what, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning in Israel, Palestine, and the death and destruction that was rained down on people overnight. Now the videos will be taken and posted at YouTube so that we can see this horror again. This all started tonight because, as I said, you know, seeing the videos that are out there of what is happening yet again to the people of Gaza, yet again, by this massive force that is Israel. It's just I don't have the words for it. I really don't. I'm going to stop trying. Let's come back over to the U.S.